Hi, I'm Jillian Swinford.
And I'm Haley Brolison.
And this is Mother Nature Will Kill You,
a podcast about the most horrific tragedies
and the most triumphant survival stories that the wilderness can provide.
So grab your backpack
and maybe a bottle of wine.
And let's go on a wild ride into the unknown.
Walking down this road I go, but I am going alone. Running far, far from home, till I am but skin and bone. I don't wanna die, but I'll have to try. Oh, I don't wanna die, but I'm on my own.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon.
Good day.
It's Mother Nature Will Kill You. We have so much to talk about this week. It's been insane.
Yeah.
And woke up this morning and now there's a coup in Russia.
Is there?
Yes.
Oh my God.
We'll have to go look that up later. But I was like, what is happening this week?
World's ending. Orcas are taking their territory back by ramming ships.
Yes.
And
White Russia's, Gladys.
Yeah.
We can't even talk about White Gladys because we have a whole sub to talk about.
Yeah. Yes. We do.
And missing children.
There goes Waylon.
In the jungle that we haven't. It feels like since the last time we recorded, it's just been.
Shit's hit the fan.
Like one survival related news story after another. Like it's been crazy.
Like literally the day after, or not the day after, like the moment after we hopped off recording the last podcast, I walk out of the room and I like chat with my dad and he's like, oh, did you just see that a whole plane crashed in Colombia and like only the kids survived? I was like, what? No, he's like, I was going to text it to you while you're on the phone with Jillian, but I didn't want to distract you. And I was like, well, we'll talk about that next time.
Yeah. And then literally a week later, a bunch of billionaires decided to seal themselves in a Pringles can. And here we are.
Yeah, which we can talk more about that in a hot second. But that's just wild. Like, I saw a TikTok about how, I forget what they termed it to be, but it was like these high-class tourism attractions now. Like how Mount Everest. Mm-hmm. And gosh, what was the name of that movie? We talked about it too.
The 1996 Everest disaster. That was like our second episode.
I know, it was so long ago. And I just watched the video on TikTok like the other day, and I can't remember like what the movie title was called, but
I think it's just like, Everest.
Or is it Out of Thin Air? Is that an Everest?
That's the book.
Okay.
Yeah, Into Thin Air.
Into Thin Air. Yeah, I think it was that. But it's all about like talking about how there's like these like high dollar tourism attractions now for like the elite rich people, and like there's accidents that happen, but it's not going to deter people because it's just going to be another quote unquote learning lesson. Mm-hmm. And then it brings exposure of like, oh, I can actually go down to the Titanic. Like that's an attainable trip for me. I could go to Everest because they have all of the necessities for me. I just have to pay them a bunch of money to do it for me.
And yeah, if you're rich.
Or if you're rich.
You're willing to take out a second mortgage on your house or something.
Or like going to space. Like people have flown into space that are super rich.
So one of the billionaires that passed on the sub actually went to space with Jeff Bezos. So that is exactly the kind of people we were talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just found that interesting because until I saw that TikTok, I didn't put that thought together where like we are living in a world now where these extreme environments are being toured by the extremely rich, that group of people. So I just thought that was interesting because I was like, wow. And I saw another video that was like, this is out of my tax bracket, but like, I just have some questions. I was like, yeah, this is out of my tax bracket for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went on a deep dive, into all of the facts, but it'll be very, I'll try to make it as brief as possible of what has happened from this Sunday, the 25th, to this Thursday, Friday, which is when the sub exploded. I was literally following this on CNN Live, like at work.
Yeah.
Because I was like writing down more as it like went along.
Yeah. So quick question though. When you first heard the news, what was your first thought?
Oh, you know, I didn't really look into it that much, which is funny. Because my mom was like, oh yeah, there's a sub that went missing. And I was like, oh, that's wild. And then I went to bed because it was like late Sunday night. And then the next day I was like, so you're saying there could be either two wrecks at the bottom of the ocean caused by the hubris of man, or they're gonna fucking suffocate in a metal tomb of their own design.
Yeah.
Which is a terrible way to go.
I get the, like, the hair on my arms just stood up when you said that, because when I first heard about it, we watch Good Morning America every morning. Like, it's just kind of like the easy, breezy, like, turn on the news, get your coffee, get ready for work kind of thing. And so they had, like, there was a story on that, and I was like, oh God, like, that's horrible. Mm-hmm. And then when they were talking about it, I was like, those people are dead. And if they're not dead, they're gonna die. Like, there's no way that they're coming out of that alive. And when I started to think about the situation, how there's five of them in this little pod, first of all, claustrophobic in the first place. And then, like, being down there for more than 8 hours, like, bathroom problems. Then you're in this little pod with, like, piles of shit, probably vomit. Like, and that's if they are still alive, trapped. Like, their nervous system is freaking the fuck out.
Yeah.
Like, but we know now that that was not the case. And, like, I don't know. That is not a good way to go if you're trapped. Yeah. And, like, honestly, the 19-year-old, like, dear God. That's so sad.
Like, the rest of them, you know, save for probably the French explorer. I don't know too much about him. But the other three billionaires, you know, it's kind of hard to feel bad for them because they created the situation. And you cannot be a billionaire in today's society without exploiting the working class. Like, that's just how it is. So I think a lot of people do not feel bad. They don't feel bad.
I know. And it's hard to say that, though, because it's like somebody's life was lost.
Yeah.
And, like, you don't want to seem like a terrible person. And so it's like, but at the same time, there's tons of people out there who are making the jokes about it, too. And it's like, oh, like, I think I sent you a video. It's like, oh, our next tourism attraction is to have them, like, spend, like, pay $350,000 to go to the center of a volcano in a Nissan Altima.
Yeah.
Like, just like those jokes are being made. And I'm like, that's kind of funny. I feel bad laughing, but, like, it's kind of funny.
Well, and here's the thing. Like, I do actually truly feel bad for the kid because I was reading an article about how his mom or his aunt or something was talking about how he was nervous. He didn't want to go, but he wanted to make his dad happy. So that
is so sad.
That is sad. And I think we need to recognize that that really is a tragedy.
Yeah.
And I don't think he fits in with the other four in that way.
Yeah.
We also have to talk about the fact that there was another maritime disaster that happened that barely got any airtime.
Yes. And then after the development of this news was completed, then that news finally got a little touched on, which is just awful to say too. So
if you guys don't know, there was a refugee boat in the Mediterranean with like 800 passengers on it, and I believe only 104 survived, and the rest are either dead or missing. And it was basically stranded, unable to move under its own power, and Greek authorities pushed it back out into international waters, and whatever weight shift happened caused it to capsize.
That's so fucked up.
And there's literally hundreds of people.
Yeah, I saw the picture.
Pakistani refugees. Yeah.
And it's horrible.
And, you know, here we are with all the media attention, all of the, like, you know, Coast Guard military efforts finding these five people trapped, well, potentially trapped in a submarine. Turns out they died.
Yeah.
And so it's just kind of frustrating as somebody who is part of the middle class, working class section of the world to watch the difference in media coverage, basically.
Yeah. I mean, and you wonder too what's behind it. Like, are some of those billionaires that passed, did they give major donations to some of these news channels? And then there's a tie there where they're like, we have to cover this because like this family gives us money. Like, you never know what's really behind all of the doors there. So,
yeah. I also think too that it has this kind of salaciousness to it and this kind of like scandal to it because of all the stuff we're uncovering about Oceangate. And like, we knew nothing about submarine tourism until literally a week
this
ago.
This disaster.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I think as like normal people, we're like, oh my God, is this what rich people do when we're not looking?
I know, like, right?
It very much reminds me of Firefest. Do you remember that?
Yes, that, yeah. No, but Firefest did not claim any lives.
They didn't. But we were all laughing at how these people were suffering, like they were living in a refugee camp, even though they paid like thousands of dollars for these.
Yeah, and it's like, dude, that's like what people live like in some areas of the world.
Yeah. So it's really opened this interesting, like kind of fucked up, but kind of like warranted cultural conversation about why are these people getting to hoard all of our resources?
Well, and it's also like super ego driven too. That's how I personally feel, because like I'm sure you've seen it in one of the interviews that the CEO of Oceangate gave, he was like, oh yeah, I broke some rules. Like some of this is like, you know, some people consider it like, what is it, bad engineering, whatever he said, but he's like, I checked the boxes, blah 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 blah, kind of thing. And then the fucking submarine implodes on itself,
right?
And so it's very ironic that he is documented saying that he broke rules and didn't do the necessary precautions to test this thing out, and then it fails. And so then it's like there's so many questions behind that. It's like, did you not want to do it because you wanted to do it your own way? Did you not like somebody telling you what to do? Like, why did you not go the correct route? So
I listened to something interesting that kind of talked about this with extremely wealthy people. It's called the Kennedy effect.
Oh.
And it's like they don't have a sense of their own mortality, and so they aren't able to calculate risks as well as somebody like us would be able to. Because, you know, we have to deal, and especially with like poor or underprivileged people, have to deal with risks to their life every day.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, I don't know, like there's people that have to go find their own water source and bring jugs with them and like fill their own water up. And that might be a little bit of a sketchy trek. And then you add the weight of all these water jugs while you carry them back down. Sometimes maybe people fall. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's just, there's things in the daily life like that just can occur. Like, I mean, in our field of work, like you can go out into the field, like you could get bit by a rattlesnake. That's just like what it is. Or like people down where I am, it's like they could be out diving and for some random reason, there's like a random shark attack when they're diving. You know what I mean? Like maybe something's just provoked and like it just happens.
Yeah.
And it's like there is always like a thought of your mortality while you're in the field. Like when I was pulling nets and there was one time and we were in some guy's backyard. He's like, oh, watch out. There's like a 6-foot gator that lives back here. I'm like, fucking sweet. Like now I need to worry about a gator biting my leg off while I'm pulling nets. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And then like some areas were super sharky. And I'm like,
so I thought that was a really interesting take and probably pretty applicable, because most of the time you can pay your way out of, you know, mortality. But sometimes you can't. Sometimes you pay your way into mortality.
Yeah.
Like these five people did. I would say really four. Sad. I'm going to keep the 19-year-old out of it, frankly. I don't really think that he should be lumped in with the others. But
yeah, it's really hit. Yeah, that's just really sad. When I saw that there was a kid on board, I was like, dear God. Like,
I mean, I know technically he's an adult, but 19, you're
still a kid. You're still a kid. Yeah.
You're still a kid.
I was just thinking about it too. It's like my dad and I, like, obviously we haven't gone down in a submarine or anything, but it's like we do things together. It's like, oh, mm-hmm. let's go on this trip and do this. Like, that would be fun to do together. But like our trips are fishing trips, or they're like camping trips, or they're like, let's just go to a baseball game. Like, they're very low risk trips.
Yeah.
But like, that's how I kind of related those two passengers. I was like, oh, I could totally see this being like what rich people do in their spare time. They're like, oh,
this is rich people camping. This is
camping. Oh, son, let's go on this exploratory dive down to the Titanic and like have some bonding time. Like, I could totally see it being like that, which is why I just feel like, especially for that mother, dear God, like that woman lost her husband and her child. Oh my God. I can't even imagine.
Yeah. And so I think I agree with a lot of people in saying that like we should, as a society, should not have $250,000 to drop on a trip like this. Like, there are other things that money should be going to, but they are people, and there are aspects, especially that 19-year-old, that I'm like, that doesn't sit well with me that he's being lumped in with everybody else.
Yeah. Personally. It's like not really his fault, you know?
It's not. So let's get into like the deets.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of you have probably like picked this whole thing apart, but I'm going to we're going to talk about specific structural problems, because this isn't exactly what our podcast is about, is situations just like this. It really is. And it's funny because we did the Byford dolphin incident earlier.
Yes. And that's what this was reminding me of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I heard
back and listen to that episode, if you guys are interested in more of this type of talk.
Do not look up the pictures from that. Just fair warning to everybody. Don't do it. Just don't do it.
Mm-mm.
If you want to know what a human being looks like imploded, then I guess you can do that if you really want to.
I did not look those images up because I know myself. I just let Jillian take the lead on that one.
I'd already seen them by the time I was like, hey, you should do this story. It's really interesting. She's like, okay. And then I was like, wait, I need to shield you from these pictures.
Yes. Don't put them in the show notes, like when you share them with me. I was like, please just do like a caption, really gory picture of a body imploded. Yeah. Like, okay, got it. That's enough for me to know.
Yeah. All right. So back to the Titan. The Titan submarine was run by OceanGate, which, side note, I love how people thought this is just what we were calling this whole thing, and not like the name of the company. I thought that was hilarious.
That is also very ironic, because I just finished watching The White House Plumbers that talked about Watergate. And so in my mind, like, my brain was still on not conspiracies, but you know, that type of stuff. So
hashtag OceanGate. So this is a private company that developed a submersible with the goal of pay to play submersible tourism for the rich. In this case, to take 5 individuals, that's the max number they could take down to see the Titanic wreck,
I would say you need to have 3. That's my personal opinion on that.
We'll get into that, because this is like the highest capacity submarine that can technically reach these depths. I put can reach the depths in quotations, because so Titan lost contact with the support ship, the Canadian vessel, the Polar Prince, about 45 minutes from when it entered the water on Sunday, June 25th, 2023.
Oh, so it was 45 minutes? I heard it was like an hour and 45 minutes.
It might have been an hour and 45 minutes, and I didn't write it down properly.
Oh.
Yeah, you're right. I think it was about 2 hours.
I just been hearing on the news it was like over an hour was like into their dive.
Yeah.
But still pretty early on. Like, they haven't even gone halfway down yet, right, because it was supposed to be an 8-hour dive.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
Sorry.
So no, it's okay. So it's more than halfway down to the Titanic wreck, which sits 12,500 feet below the surface, which is about 2.4 miles. It's 900 miles east of Cape Cod in the North Atlantic, and I think about 300 or 400 miles south of Newfoundland.
It's in international waters, right?
It is.
Which that is was why part of the problem.
Could do this.
That was part of the problem with the rescue efforts.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we'll get into that, I'm sure. Yeah. Sorry.
Because you've researched it all too.
Like, I've been keeping up with it.
Oh, okay. So loss of contact with the surface vessel is not unusual for the Titan. Communication between the vessel and ships was common in its other successful Titanic dives. So there have been other successful Titanic dives in this sub before this point. This is not its first dive.
But was the I don't know how to word this correctly. Like the aftercare, like the care of the sub after the dive, was that maintained? Like, was there proper maintenance and checks after each dive? Because I feel like there wasn't.
There was, and I'll get into, though, the structural issues with the build of the sub.
Gotcha.
Less okay. about the people who were involved in maintaining it and more about the actual build of the sub itself.
Okay.
Initially. So Coast Guard was notified of a missing vessel at 5:40 p.m., three hours after the vessel was expected to surface at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. People on board were pilot and CEO of Ocean Gate, Stockton Rush, French underwater wreck expert who had visited the Titanic dozens of times, Paul-Henri Nardiolet. And he's the one that I'm like unsure about, like, is he a billionaire or is he like an underwater archaeologist or a little bit of both? I don't know. British entrepreneur Hamish Harding, that's the guy who went to space with Jeff Bezos.
Gotcha.
And father and son duo from a wealthy British Pakistani family, Shahzada and Solomon Dawood. And Solomon is the 19-year-old.
Yeah.
So he's the one for me that I don't really include with the other four. Gotcha. All individuals, however, paid $250,000 to go on this underwater voyage to explore the remains of the Titanic. And the Titan has not been approved or certified by any regulatory body.
Mm-hmm.
So possible scenarios as of Sunday that we were all fretting about in our brains. Because they are sealed in. From the outside, the Titan can only be opened from the outside.
Yeah.
Which led to three possible scenarios. The sub managed to actually make it back to the surface, but did not have any comms. But because it can't be opened from the passengers, it can only, you know, the Coast Guard were out searching the surface waters to try to find this thing so they could open and let them out. Otherwise, they would have run out of air.
Yes.
At the surface, right? So that's one. Two. And this is the one that we now know is true. The Titan crushed due to a leak or faulty design due to immense pressure. All crew mm-hmm. immediately deceased. That is yeah. what happened. But we did yeah. not know that at the time.
No.
And then the other one, which I wrote as most likely during this week. This is the one I thought was actually going on. The Titan is either trapped under the wreck of the Titanic or lost power, unable to release manual ballast, and is trapped deep underwater with limited oxygen. All passengers alive at time of the trappage or mechanical failure.
Yeah.
So if the passengers were still alive, it's likely that they were facing hypothermia on top of oxygen depletion and CO2 poisoning. It's likely that frost had begun to develop on the inside of the sub. And it should also be noted that the only person that could stretch out their legs at any, or only one person could stretch out their legs at any given time in the sub. So
mm-hmm.
that is what I think for a week, all of us were like, oh my God, is this what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
And
because all of those scenarios are horrible scenarios.
Yeah.
Like, if you're like, because there is a port window in that submarine. So mm-hmm. like if you are on the surface, you can see the outside world. You just yeah. can't fucking get to it.
Right.
So that's horrible. And then you die seeing mm-hmm. just your salvation right on the other side. But you can't yeah. get to it. And then the dying under pressure, that's probably the quickest and, I don't know, most
painless
way to go. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. That's what they were saying on the news. Like, hey, if there's any solace to this, they didn't feel a thing. They didn't even know it was coming.
No.
And then the other one, like you were saying, the other option of them getting stuck down there, that's a slow and painful way to go, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you're scared at that point too, because you don't even see the outside. At least mm-hmm. in the first option, you see the outside and you're probably like, okay, there's hope. If we see a boat coming by, like bang on everything yeah. to get attention.
Yeah.
But down that far deep in the water, if you're trapped, like, and you know nobody goes that far down.
No.
So like you are not getting rescued. I think what did they say? Like the robots or like the cranes that the Coast Guard had, like they didn't even go that far down. Yeah. Right. So yeah, it's really all the scenarios are horrible scenarios. The first one is the best chance that they have at surviving, but the second one is the best way to go, to die. Unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah, if they were going to die. Then, yeah. And so that's what happened. And I am a little relieved for that.
Yeah.
Especially for that 19-year-old kid. But it's horrific. It really, like, and I think all of us were just, all of us who are in this world of like marine science, or like you're interested in survival stories, or you just have a morbid fascination, all of us were running through these scenarios like, oh my fucking God, like that is horrific. It's a horrific way to die.
Yeah. Like,
so search began officially on Sunday. And at that time, it was estimated that the sub had 96 hours of reserve oxygen. And so that countdown began that we all experienced. At 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Coast Guard said at a press conference on Wednesday, the 21st, they estimated the supply was down to about 20 hours, and oxygen was estimated to run out by Thursday morning. The search was expanded to 10,000 miles of surface and 2.4 miles down to the ocean floor where the wreck was. And so I saw a bunch of news anchors, especially from the UK, that were like criticizing the Coast Guard. And I was just like,
because they don't know how it works.
I was like, fuck off. They don't have the capability to go down there. Nobody does.
Yeah.
Except for like scientific institutions. We'll get into that. That pissed me off. I was like, you back the fuck off, because they are already doing above and beyond what they
do. I know. And it's... So, I know the Coast Guard gets shit on from time to time, I feel like, too, for things like that. And it's like they, like I said earlier, they didn't have the capabilities to go that far deep with their cranes or their ROVs or anything like that. And it's like you said, only scientific institutions have that technology.
Yeah. And it wasn't just the U.S. It was the Canadian Coast Guard, too. It was both international effort. So.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So then, when like Tuesday into Wednesday morning, if you remember, there were banging noises ID'd by a Canadian aircraft and an ROV, which is a remote operated vehicle, was relocated to where the noises were detected to go investigate. The first searches, quote unquote, yielded negative results and were inconclusive, but the media took that shit and ran with it and said, oh, signs of life, it's an SOS, which was never confirmed by the Coast Guard. That also pissed me off.
Yeah, I know. When I heard that there was banging noises, I was like, that's not... Like, the banging noises could be just anything. Like, it could be the Titanic shifting. It could be fucking marine debris from their submarine hitting the seafloor. Yeah. Like, it could
There's
be...
so much.
And the fact that it was 30-minute intervals in my brain, I was like... Why would they do SOS in 30-minute intervals?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you would do, like, you would be constantly, like, banging all the time. Like, if you were alive, I mean, granted, that's, like, wasting your oxygen. Maybe that's why they would, like, quote unquote, in 30-minute intervals. But still, I don't know, 30-minute intervals seem too long of an interval for me to do all that.
Yeah. So, yeah, like you said, it was initially reported every 30 minutes, but they brought in acoustic specialists from HUI, which is Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute.
Yeah.
One of the premier
that's
ocean
a great institute.
Research.
Yeah, top tier.
On the planet. And they have stated, and these are the experts, that it's hard to identify, one, where the noises are coming from, and two, what they are. Because like you said, sorry, there's a whole big hunk of metal wreck down there that is actively decaying. It literally could be anything, right?
Yeah.
And
I mean, you see that in like in documentaries when they're filming underwater wrecks and like you hear that noise in those documentaries and the wreck looks like it's stable, but like there's things that just currents down there cause for shifting to happen, so
bacteria eating away at everything so at least one at this time at least one remote operated vehicle was deployed by the Canadian vessel the Horizon Arctic
and reached the seafloor on Wednesday, and another from the French vessel L'Atlante is expected to deploy on, or was expected to deploy on Thursday. You see, I was writing this in real time.
Yeah, was expected.
So multiple maritime surveillance planes from the U.S. and Canadian armed forces have flown over 10,000 miles of sea surface, including the U.S. Coast Guard P3 Orion, and they dropped sonar buoys all over the area. They were doing the most, and still getting criticized by news anchors. It's just like, fuck off.
And
fuck
you know those off. News anchors could not do what they're doing either. No. So it's like, put your money where your mouth is and let's see you do that.
Yeah. So, and then by Thursday morning, the 22nd, the theorized oxygen reserve had run out at that point. On Thursday, then around 11 a.m., the Coast Guard announced that a debris field was found by one of the ROVs. I think it's the Canadian one from the Horizon Arctic. That began searching around the wreck. By 3 p.m. on Thursday, the Coast Guard announced that the ROV had found the submarine and had exploded, and debris was spread across the seafloor. They found that the debris field was consistent with a catastrophic implosion and found five major pieces of debris that helped them ID the sub, including the nose cone. So it was like, definitely... There's only two wrecks down there. One's super futuristic and one's from the fucking like 1800s. So,
yeah,
you know. And then the sub wreckage was found about 1600 feet from the bow of the Titanic. All five men are presumed dead, and the search for the bodies, analysis of the wreck will continue, but the search itself is as demobilized as of now. The Coast Guard is continuing to analyze the timeline of the catastrophic implosion. The reason we say implosion is because whenever the leak or the failure occurred, everything came in and they got crushed. So, fun.
I can't imagine.
So now there's two wrecks down there, which really bothers me. It is really weird.
Yeah.
To think about. For the same reason. Like, the Titanic has just claimed five more casualties.
There's a TikTok I saw. I think I may have sent it to you, or you sent it to me. And it was, like, about, I was like, POV, you're a Titanic ghost just chilling. And then it's like, all right, guys, you got five new members. Welcome to the society.
Yes.
I was like, I feel so bad for laughing at this. But, like, the way that people have, like, I don't know, made jokes about it. I'm like, that's kind of funny. But also,
the humor is top tier. It's top tier. Yeah. And honestly, I think it's because we have gone through so much as trauma. As a trauma, that like humor is the way we deal with like traumatic events now.
Yeah.
It's just the,
it's the millennial coping mechanism.
Millennial and Gen Z, it's both of us.
Yeah.
Like, both of our generations like deal with it in the same way, which tells you that this trauma has been prolonged.
Yes.
Too long. Yeah. So I think that's also part of it. You know, it's like watching a car crash. You can't look away.
Well, and also it's interesting, like, just to see the generational developments, not generational, well, I guess generational, I don't know, but the developments over time with science and technology of those two wrecks sitting side by side, like the next explorer that goes down there, it's going to be a very weird comparison where you're like, wow, we are sitting in a time frame where we have like two horrific wrecks and they are both, they're different centuries.
Yes.
Like weird to think about.
We haven't learned a damn lesson.
Yeah.
Honestly, if we weren't also collectively obsessed with the Titanic, like as a society, this wouldn't have happened. I mean, there's so many other shipwrecks. Why is it just because of Leo that we're so obsessed with the Titanic?
I don't know. There's also conspiracy theories around the Titanic too, about how it's really the, what is it, like the Ophelius? Is that, was that the, what it's called? Oh God, now I need to like look this up. But there's conspiracy theories that they're like, its sister ship was the one that really sank, and the Titanic looks like it. Hold on, man. Titanic.
I'm sure there's so many conspiracy theories. I just remember Britannic, being a kid And all of my peers were obsessed with the Titanic. And I was like, why? It's so awful what happened to those people. And then I was like, oh, I get it. It's all
the morbid
about
fascination.
Leo.
Oh. Oh, and Leo. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the Titanic sister ship was called the Britannic. And so it looks the same. And so, yeah, so it was just, there's conspiracy theories out there. It's like, it looks the same, but one of them had like an engineering malfunction. So then they decided to put everybody on the other ship and like, yada, yada, yada. And
it's funny because I was planning on doing a double, like a twofer Titanic story later this year, because it is we should cover it within like the subject of our show. It is not my tragedy though, if that makes sense. Like, it's not, I don't obsess over the Titanic like everybody else does.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's,
I don't either.
I don't know if it's because everyone else is obsessed with it. I'm like, no, I'm not going to be mainstream.
You're a hipster morbid storyteller. Is that what
but
that
I
is?
I was like, I'm going to do this because, like, I think other people would really like it. And I've actually never watched the entire movie, like, contiguously.
So, the end of the movie, I have a complaint, and it mirrors the end of Where the Crawdads Sing. And when I saw that scene, I literally busted out laughing. And then I was like, oh, no, come on, not again. Because at the end of the Titanic, when she drops the necklace into the ocean, the noise she makes and the way she does it, she's like, eh. Like, just, I don't know, it's the weirdest thing to me. I feel like it could have been done a lot better, but I'm not an actor, so that's just me.
Yeah, no,
but anyway, I'm not a producer, but the way that they did it, I just feel like it could have been done better, because she just kind of like, eh.
Yeah,
like it didn't, the and it's the noise, I think it's really the noise that she makes. Like, I think if the noise wasn't there, it might have been a little bit better. But in Where the Crawdads Sing, if you read the book, if you've seen the movie, he drops. Yeah. So in the movie, he like drops the evidence into the creek that they live on. And he does the same fucking motion, the same fucking tone, and the same fucking noise. And I was like, is this them trying to joke on the Titanic scene? I can't tell. But
is this satire?
Like,
I don't know anymore.
I know. And he did the same thing. He was like, ugh. And I was like, oh my God, I cannot deal with these scenes. So anyway, that was just my little tease.
So anyway, later this year, we're going to talk about the Titanic. So I'm going to like research the fuck out of it and then go watch the movie in its entirety, which is something I've never done before. And it's going to be amusing, to say the least.
I'm going to send you that video clip when we get off of this,
so we'll talk about
laugh
that,
laugh at it with me.
All right, well, let's get through this so we can move on, because
yeah.
I want to talk of, I have a good story.
I'll shut up.
So let's talk about the specs of the Titan and why we think that it imploded, basically.
Gotcha.
So it can carry 5 people, 1 pilot and mission specialists, which has included archaeologists, marine biologists, or anyone who can afford the experience. It's made of titanium like caps, and then the tube is made of filament wound carbon fiber, and this is actually the biggest issue as to why they think it imploded. We'll get into it. It is 22 feet long, or was, I guess it was 22 feet long, capable of diving to depths of 13,000 feet with a comfortable safety margin, which again, is it? Uses 4 thrusters to move around and is controlled by a Logitech video game controller, which everybody was just losing their minds over. They said about the game controller that designers wanted to use as much off-the-shelf tech as possible to control costs and make controlling the submarine easier, which I kind of get, but come on.
I kind of get that, but at the same time, if you are a billionaire and you are having people spend $250,000 to take a trip on this thing, like,
yeah,
I don't know, you clearly have the money to, like,
make
pay
your
for
own
good stuff.
Yeah.
Or make your own. Yeah, like, whatever. But
yeah,
the video you sent me of the one girl like green screening that interview where he's like, oh, death and dismemberment. Where do I sign? And then like going in, he's like, oh, we have to take our shoes off. And like they go in and they sit crisscross applesauce. And he's like, oh, yep. this I got at Camper World. And he's like, oh, and then we control everything with this remote control right here. I thought that was satire.
No.
I thought that was an SNL episode.
No.
And then I realized that that was the real interview. And I was like, yeah. Oh God.
Yeah.
I was
like, yeah.
So good.
Yeah. So a fun fact used Elon Musk's Starlink satellite tech to communicate because there is no GPS ability underwater because satellites don't do well through there.
Yeah.
A submersible was required to communicate with a surface vessel every 15 minutes. There's no real toilet or seats you pee into, like, our little container, basically.
The jug they had was the same jug that my grandpa had in the hospital room when he was dying. That's the same jug that he peed in.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've seen that jug before. That's what grandpa peed in when he was in the hospital.
Also, I hope they have, like, had some kind of thing, like a funnel, if you're a woman, because women have gone on that sub before.
Yeah.
Like, if I try to pee in a thing, pee would get everywhere. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
And so, yeah. So, no seats. They have to sit cross-legged on the floor, which mm-hmm. really bothered me, because that's not the most comfortable sitting position for the length mm-mm. of time that they were even supposed to be down there.
Yeah.
The only window is a porthole in the front. We'll get into why the porthole is an issue later. Titan is held underwater by ballast weights, which turns out were literally just scrap metal. Boop.
Oh, what?
Yeah. So the crew members can release the ballast by using a manual pneumatic pump or by literally rocking back and forth and shifting the weight.
What?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't understand, but okay.
The other failsafe for the ballast were that the lines securing the ballast are designed to fall apart in 24 hours. So if they're stuck down there, supposedly those lines will disintegrate, release the ballast, and they can go up to the surface.
That just does not sound safe at all.
Yeah.
Like, just worst case scenario, you get trapped and what? You have 24 hours to get saved and then you implode anyway?
No. You are going to be down there for 24 hours until those lines degrade enough to release the ballast, and then you can go up.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Still not ideal.
Yeah, no, not ideal.
So,
but Jesus.
Yeah. While the Titan has a heater, it does get colder internally as the sub descends, as the temperatures on the abyssal plane are just above freezing.
Yes.
And
yes.
Yeah.
Cold. That's something that they talked about. They may have said that on the news, or maybe they said that on another mm-hmm. video I saw on the internet, but I don't know if people realize that it's fucking cold down there, because yeah. sunlight does not reach all the way that far down into the ocean.
Yeah, it barely reaches 100 feet, 200 feet yeah. below the surface, really.
Yes.
And this is something that's common of any deep sea submersible. It's not just specific to the Titan. But I just wanted to reiterate how fucking cold it is down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Titan can only be opened from the outside, requiring assistance from others if the crew are to leave.
That was the one thing when I heard that, I was like, golly. Like,
yeah.
Like, like that's something that I feel like, and I know that I'm not an engineer or anything, so I acknowledge that I'm taking this with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I feel like that's common sense. Like, you have to have a way to get yourself out of something you yeah. put yourself in.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Typical missions, what was supposed to happen, include an almost 3-hour descent to the wreck, followed by 6 hours on the seafloor exploring the wreck to a 3-hour ascent, making the total experience, mind you, cross-legged on the floor, 12 hours.
Oh, God.
The whole paid for, supposed to happen experience was still 12 hours cross-legged on the floor.
So I heard it was supposed to be an 8-hour trip, but now you're saying it's, the experience is 12 hours?
That's what I read. I used NPR for...
Okay. Trusted source.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about other deep sea submersibles and the depth of the Titanic wreck so people can really understand how much mm-hmm. pressure is there, why the Coast Guard could not go down, etc.
The depth of the Titanic wreck is about 12,500 feet, which is 3,800 meters under the surface of the North Atlantic. Lies in the bathypelagic or midnight zone of the deep sea. It's fucking dark.
Dark as fuck.
Yeah. Pressure underwater increases one atmosphere every 10 minutes. At the Titanic, it's 375 atmospheres for every square inch of that subsurface was experiencing 5,550 pounds of downward force.
Yeah,
that's that a lot. Is how much pressure.
Yeah.
So when that sub collapsed, the individuals inside vaporized. There are no bodies.
That was going to be my question. Yeah. Was like, is there like any body recovery, or if they just did like straight up disintegrate?
It's not like the Biford dolphin. I mean, that happened on the surface. Mm-hmm. It's like, because the pressure was everywhere all around, and it's implosion instead of explosion, which I feel like the Biford dolphin exploded because it was at the surface, right?
Yeah.
There are only 10 submarines in the world that can dive to the depth of the Titanic or deeper. This includes Huey's. Remember, we talked about Woods Hole.
Mm-hmm.
Alvin and the Challenger Deep Sea. And they are primarily used for scientific research of the deep sea. Because of them, we would not know about like hydrothermal vent communities or deep sea life, all of which can give us an idea of maybe what life looks like on other planets.
Because
those ecosystems are not relying on sunlight, right? Mm-hmm. And can also maybe help us find some bacteria that could help us solve some medical issues or, you know, this kind of all kinds of stuff going on with that research.
Extremophiles.
Right. All of these, like 10 subs, are certified, except for the Titan, except for OceanGate subs.
Well, so, I mean, the proof is right there. We saw why it's not certified.
To put this all in perspective, military submarines may only be able to get down to around 2,000 feet or 800 meters max depth. And this is like Russia has some deep diving class of submarine. And typically it's more around 1,500 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So compared to 12,000 feet, military submarine is not going to get down there, period.
Yeah.
End of statement. Yeah. Which is why the Coast Guard could only really scan the surface and help support other people to put ROVs in the water.
Yeah.
Fun fact, and this I might do a story on this later, the deepest successful sub rescue to date took place at a depth of 1,575 feet.
Yeah, so that's like, what, 11,500 feet shallower?
Yeah.
Than where OceanGate went.
Yeah. Right. So why the fuck did this happen then? Let's get into OceanGate scandals. So they have received several complaints and warnings about the safety of its subs. In 2018, a lawsuit from the company's former director of marine operations, David Lockridge, flagged safety issues with the Titan as it was under development in 2015. And he was fired when the issues were brought to the current CEO's attention. And he was accused of breaking his contract.
That's what I think is so fucked. And like, honestly, good for that guy. If I was in the same position, I'm like, go ahead. Like, fire me. Like, I'm trying to keep you guys safe. I'm trying to save a life here.
Right. Right. So Lockridge was concerned about the lack of testing on the Titan's 5-inch thick carbon fiber hull, which was designed in collaboration with NASA, which is great. They do aeronautical research. You'd think it would work. Mm-hmm. Problem is, space is a vacuum. Deep sea is not a vacuum. It is the opposite, in fact.
Yes.
So, because the hull is made out of composite material, i.e. two kinds of materials interwoven, it's more open to microabrasions, cracks, and water getting in with pressure because the materials have two different pressure ratings.
Yeah.
And that's the issue, because you want, when you're... I love how we've all turned into like armchair submarine engineers.
I know. It's like we all know everything about this right now.
From what I've been able to understand, you want like a surface that is as uniform as you can possibly get it, made out of the same material if you're going to go to those depths.
Well,
That
again,
was
I
the
feel like
issue.
that's also kind of common sense too. It's like, why would you have two different materials that crush under different pounds of pressure? Like, I don't, you would want them to withstand the same amount of pressure. I don't know, maybe like there was a thought about like layering them, if they were like layered for some reason, that it
But
would
they
like be
weren't, that it's
they weren't.
interwoven.
Oh,
It's carbon
yeah, so
fiber, so it's like the two materials are interwoven.
yeah. When I heard
And
that, I was like, oh dear God. It's like, I know I'm not an engineer, but I feel like that's something that's common sense.
Well, and the thing is, it's like it's one of those materials that may work the first time you go all the way down, may work the second time, third, fourth, fifth, but maybe on the seventh time you go all the way down, that's when you have a catastrophic failure because the damage is happening little by little over time as you continue to use it.
Well, yeah, and that's when I was at, that's why I was asking about the maintenance of it, because like clearly there's wear and tear every time you do an excursion because of the pressure that you're under. And so I was curious about just the details of the maintenance that happened after each dive. And then like how, I'm also curious, and I know you don't know these answers, maybe you do, maybe you don't, but I'm also curious about how like those materials are tested in a lab facility to know how many pounds of pressure that they can withstand.
I believe there are like chambers designed to input that amount of pressure on materials. That's how they test these things.
Gotcha.
As far as the maintenance, I do not think the damage would have been visible.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, that's why I'm curious about the details of the maintenance. 'Cause, like, did they take everything apart and inspect it and then put it back
I don't know.
together? Or did they just look at it from the outside and it was like, yep, looks good. Slap a slapper, like, you know, how they slap the soil bag? Like, yep, looks good. Let's go. Like,
The other big issue, besides the carbon fiber hull, is that the port window of the Titan was only designed to withstand depths of 4,200 feet.
yeah, which is again a lot more shallow than where they were fucking going. I don't understand any of this.
So those were the two biggest issues. The same year, the chairman of the Marine Technology Society Submarine Group wrote a letter to the company saying that 38 industry experts had unanimous concern about the Titan's lack of adherence to the industry's standards. Chairman Will Cohen told NPR on the 21st, "We have submarines all over the world diving at 12,000 to 20,000 feet every day of the year for research. We know very well how to design these machines and how to operate them safely." Right? OceanGate has two documented safety incidents prior to this one. In 2022, a sub experienced a battery issue during a dive and had to be manually reattached to its lifting platform. In the same year, the vessel lost contact with surface crew for nearly 5 hours during a trip down.
Oh my God.
The waiver for passengers clearly states the vessel has not been approved for or certified by any regulatory body, and it also mentions that you may die going on
Yeah.
this vessel. The CEO, Stockton Rush, who is now dead, said in a 2019 interview that the commercial submarine industry's regulation stood in the way of progress, saying it's obscenely safe because they have all these regulations, but it also hasn't innovated or grown. The Titan made over 50 test dives, including depths similar to the Titanic. They have made over 200 successful dives with the three subs that they have. So there's two other subs that OceanGate runs to different places around the world, but they did not start diving the Titanic until 2021. So they've just had, this is their third season of diving the Titanic. And that is OceanGate. Hashtag
Wild.
So
So wild.
I hope
I
that cleared
just.
things up at all. If, maybe we'll do an episode about it in the future, but I think as far as we know, I've covered. If anything else major comes out, we'll talk about it a little bit up front.
Yeah, I just think it's insane how he just completely disregarded protocol. That's just kind of, it's, and it's really sad that, like, you know, five people died because of the lack of, I don't know, like the lack of being mindful of other people's safety.
Yeah. And my sources were Titanic sub search turns desperate as expert estimates Titan's oxygen is depleted. That's from NPR. Missing Titanic submersible. What is the Titan tourist sub and what might have happened to it? From The Guardian. What's it like inside the Titanic touring submersible that went missing with five people on board? From CNN. Told you I was following the live missing Titanic sub search from CNN. See how crushing pressure increased in the ocean's depths by Sophie Bushwick of Scientific American. And then Marine Group says 10 subs in the world can dive to Titanic depths. Titan is the only one not certified by Ryan Cook from Royal Canadian News. So I did a story basically on this.
Before the story, yeah. I just can't imagine that. I just can't imagine. Like, I could see if you're going to break the rules, it, like, to test out new, like, submersibles without mm-hmm. anybody in them. Like, I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, you want to see what can happen. But mm-hmm. to test out, like, to break the rules and test it out with people inside of them, like, knowing that they could die, like, that's just irresponsible to me.
Yeah. I must wonder if we should talk about the kids next time.
I know. I was going to say we can talk about the kids next time because this we're already an hour in.
I want to talk about the kids. I think that's a really interesting story, but this has just taken over my life.
We'll talk about the kids next time. It's all good. But to now I feel like I have to give a little brief synopsis of the kids for people that are like, oh, what about the kids? It's the kids that got lost in the Colombian jungle for 40 days after their plane crashed and lost their mother. So that's that story. But if you guys want to look it up in the meantime, go fucking look it up. I don't care. But we'll talk about that next time.
Yeah. And they all survived, which is cool.
Yeah.
And I'm glad.
Because they have indigenous heritage and their family members taught them how to survive in the jungle.
Which is
from an early age. And these kids are young. Like 11 years old to 1 year old. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Crazy.
We do want to talk.
Yeah. We do want to talk about it. We just can't do it right now because we are already an hour into recording. And that's about, that's about halfway through our recording session.
I knew this was going to happen.
No, it's okay.
A special episode on this fucking dumbass shit.
Well, you didn't. So this is where we're at. Which I can't is fine. Just, like I'm not. I don't care that we have to do the kids next time. That gives me more time to like kind of look into it a little bit more thoroughly than I did. But
yeah.
Also, the Ocean Gate is the hot topic of the week anyway. So
it really is, and so people are going to be getting this like a week after we record anyway. So
yeah.
All right. Well, so let's switch gears. and stop talking about billionaires and the ethics of feeling bad or not feeling bad for these people. We're going to talk about a story from a state I've actually lived in.
Oh, I forgot you lived here.
Yeah, Washington State, lived here for a year. We lived in the Tacoma, well, outskirts of Tacoma, suburbs of Tacoma, I guess. We were stationed at a military base, Fort Lewis. We sat at the base of Mount Rainier. We were about, I feel like, 2 hours away from Seattle. It was one of my favorite places we were ever stationed at. But we have another kind of personal-ish connection to the story because my parents were stationed in the area after this event. It was my dad's first duty assignment after he graduated college and my parents got married. And they came there in 85 and this happened in 80. And
oh wow, so they barely missed it, huh?
So that's they actually visited the site of this event while they lived there, and so I asked my dad about it and he kind of talked about it a little bit. But today we're going to talk about the eruption of Mount St. Helens.
Yeah, so you have like firsthand knowledge kind of it because of your dad.
But you should talk to your parents too, because
they were alive during that. They were like 20. If it happened in 1980, my dad was 20, my mom was 22.
Right. So they remember probably seeing this on the news because this was explosive. And we talked about explosions a lot this week.
Yeah.
It's a very explosive eruption. And it kind of shook people because I think when we live in the Western world, you don't really think of like this as being like a thing that happens, you know?
Yeah, like nature's still gonna nature, you know?
Right.
Like
right. So this I didn't know as much about it as I thought I did. And so I had a lot of fun kind of researching this, and especially because all these places I'm kind of like familiar with. But I never actually went to Mount St. Helens when we lived there. We just never went. And I don't
know. Well, you said you only lived there for a year, so you're like 1 year old.
No, they were stationed there twice.
So oh, when
I
okay.
was there, I was 13. I was in eighth grade.
Oh, yeah. I see. Okay. Okay.
So I do
okay.
remember a lot of it.
Yeah.
Obviously. But they've been stationed there twice. So
gotcha.
Yeah. And we actually had a little painting of the mountain before it erupted in our house somewhere. And I remember looking at it when I was a kid.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so it's like there's some anyway.
Like you could see what it was like before it erupted, but then you lived there and you saw like present day what it looked like too. That's neat. It's nice to have like a side by side like that.
Yeah. So Mount St. Helens is a volcanic peak in southwestern Washington state, located in the Cascade Range. And before its eruption, it stood 9,680 feet tall. It's called the Luwala Klo, or the Smoking Mountain, by the Klickitat people, and has erupted periodically during the last 4,500 years. And before this eruption, although the last active period was between 1831 and 1857, it is 37 miles from Mount Adams, which is considered its sister volcano.
Mm-hmm.
And it's less than 60 miles away from both Mount Hood in Oregon and Mount Rainier, which is the tallest Cascade volcano, which is the one that I lived at the base of.
That's crazy.
And I literally was talking to my dad. I was like, were we in like the mudslide, the Lahar pyroclastic flow zone, if that thing erupted? He was like, I don't think so. I think it would have went into the Puyallup Valley. So there's like different, when you live near a volcano, there's like different like danger zones, basically.
Which that's something that you need to think about when you move somewhere. Mm-hmm. Like if you're moving to the base of a volcano, you need to do your research and be like, hey, am I gonna be in the danger zone if this thing erupts? Like when we were buying a house down here, I'm like, how many feet above sea level is this?
Exactly.
You know, mm-hmm. like are we gonna get flooded?
Mm-hmm.
Still, it's like, what's gonna happen? It's just, you gotta think about those things.
Well, and thinking about, there are four volcanoes within like 100 miles of each other. And this one in particular, Mount St. Helens, is only 52 miles away from Portland, Oregon, and 98 miles from Seattle, Washington.
Wait, so 100 miles around Mount St. Helens, there's more volcanoes?
There's four volcanoes. Three. There's Mount Adams, Mount Rainier, and Mount Hood.
I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I didn't know that, but I didn't know that. That's scary.
Pacific Ring of Fire, baby.
Is that what they call? Is that that what they call that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, mm-hmm. I'm learning so much.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
God. Yeah. I don't think I would want to live over there. My anxiety would be high all the time.
Yeah. Supposedly. Just, like, and I trust because it's from, you know, volcanologist stuff. But Mount St. Helens is the most active of the four.
Oh,
there's
see.
More, like Crater Lake is another one as you go down the mm-hmm. coast with more volcanoes. Some of them are dormant, some of them are considered active, and some of them are not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it just depends on their relative closeness to tectonic plates and hotspots and shit like that, you know.
Yeah.
So there is relatively sparse human population in the immediate area around the mountain, which is good. And prior to the eruption, it contained a total of 11 glaciers.
Oh.
Prior.
Yeah, prior.
So if you're following along on the doc I sent you.
Oh, I actually don't even have that pulled up yet. Let me pull that up. I got so into
I put the pictures in the text now.
Yeah. Hold on, let me go get that. You can keep talking though.
Okay. So I do have a picture of what it looks like before, which looks like that little painting that I used to see in our house.
Uh-huh.
It looked like a Bob Ross painting. That's not, but that's what it looked
happy
like.
Happy little trees, happy little volcanoes.
Yeah. So on March 20th, 1980, there was noticeable volcanic activity on the mountain, including a series of earth tremors on the ground beneath the north flank of the mountain. These earthquakes escalated in frequency and intensity on March 27th, when a minor eruption occurred. At this point, Mount St. Helens began emitting steam and ash through its crater and vents. These small eruptions continued daily throughout the month of April, and there were noticeable changes in the actual structure of the north side of the mountain.
Oh, wow.
These noticeable changes included a large bulge.
Oh. Did anybody report that? Yeah. Like, did volcanologists be like, okay, there's a large bulge? Like, and I'm probably getting ahead of myself here, but did they send any, like, media out to, like, the residents? Like, hey, this thing's going to blow. You should get out of here. Yeah, yes, kind of. Okay, I'll let you talk about it. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself.
So this large bulge was more than a mile in diameter, and it was moving upward on the north slope.
Oh, no.
By as much as 6 feet per day.
Oh, my God. You could watch that thing move?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. That's creepy.
It was measurable. My feet.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that's
not
even like centimeters. That's
deep.
Oh, no.
So, Como TV reporter, which Como News is a Seattle, I believe, based news company.
Okay.
Reporter Dave Crockett said that this indicated it was bulging like the weak spot on an inner tube. Yeah.
Oh, no.
So.
Oh, no.
And I think I have a picture of it. You can see the difference. The bulge was caused by the intrusion of magma beneath the surface of the north flank. And once this activity happened, scores of geologists, seismologists, and media crews had been in the St. Helens area, but no one knew for sure when it would erupt. So they knew this was going on.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
Yeah. So you can see the picture I have below the bulge compared to what it looked like.
Yeah, honestly, the first picture that you have, like, before the eruption, it looks like a really pretty landscape photo.
Yeah.
Like, that makes me want to go there.
And the bulge, I think, is taken further up on the mountain because it's kind of above the tree line.
It is, and it looks more, like, in the one photo you have, you can see the snow cap, and then in the second photo, the snow cap looks to be, like, I don't know how to word this, but, like, pretty much all in frame.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So it's like you can tell that they're like right up against it.
Yeah. But you can tell even just from comparing those two how distorted it is.
Yeah. Yes.
It looks like a completely different mountain, frankly.
It does.
So authorities began evacuating hundreds of people off the mountain due to the imminent eruption. They didn't know when, they just knew it was going to happen. As a danger zone had been enacted around the bulge and summit area by the U.S. Forestry Department. However, a few people refused to leave their homes.
Yeah, that's probably.
Yeah.
I mean, people refuse to leave their homes down here for like a Category 4 hurricane. So.
Exactly. It's the same vibe.
Yeah.
These people included the 83-year-old Harry Truman. In the days before the eruption, he said, "So I'm like that old captain. By God, I'm going down with the ship. If the damn thing takes the mountain, I'm going along with it. They'll never get me off this mountain. Spirit Lake and Mount St. Helens are part of me. They're mine. They're as much a part of me as my arms and legs." So Harry Truman had settled down after a passionate affair with his wife, Edna, and the two of them began running the lodge at Spirit Lake for decades. Mount St. Helens was truly his home, physically, spiritually, and emotionally. Truman became a national celebrity for his attitude about the pending eruption. Songs were written about him, including "Give 'em Hell, Harry." However, besides the authorities, school children would write letters to him to try to get him to change his mind and leave, even if just for a short while. So that became like a whole media thing.
Yeah. If you are not bigger than any natural disaster that is going to occur in your lifetime.
No. But I do have pictures of him and Edna. I think Edna had passed at this time, but
it actually is
a really sweet story, like how they met and started running the lodge, and it's their life, and like I kind of understand it. Plus he's old, you know?
Yeah. I get it, but I also don't, you know.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. Harry Truman wasn't the only person who was in the danger zone. News media had been covering the activity since it began in March. And Dave Crockett, and yes, like Davy Crockett.
Davy Crockett, the same guy?
It's not the same guy.
Oh, because obviously Crockett different time frames.
Around the 1800s. But I had to think his parents so knew dumb? What they were doing when they named him Dave Crockett.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But he's a photographer for Como TV News in Seattle, and he was one of these people that was in the danger zone. He actually lived on the Puget Sound 150 miles away from Mount St. Helens, but started working story for the news organization. He stated of his work in March and April that once we as newsmen stood on the mountain's north slope, a volcanologist said if she erupted right now, we'd all be dead in seconds.
Yes.
Which is eerie to say the least.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Dave's ordeal with the volcano began on May 18th, 1980, when he awoke in the middle of the night with a foreboding premonition. He said he knew the mountain would erupt that day. At 3 a.m., he grabbed his climbing clothes, camera gear, and began driving down the mountain in his TV news car. The area was familiar to him as he had backpacked through the area, and he pulled onto the scenic route 504 along the Tootle River, or the Tootie. I know. He decided to take the south fork of the river that would give him the best view of the summit. Dave stated of his relationship to the outdoors, this was the eternal where I could really sense God. How could anyone not see him in these magnificent mountains that would stand forever, in these vast forests that had flourished for thousands of years? For real sustenance, I needed only to take off into the wilderness and return refreshed with renewed mental strength, which I can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, sans the God stuff, I guess, but I can relate to that. In fact, the only place I feel spiritual is in nature, really.
Yeah.
So I get it.
I understand that.
Where was I? Okay.
He was within the danger zone set by the Forestry Service.
Thank you. Just 8 miles from the summit. He found the perfect vantage point at 8:30 a.m., stating that the morning was fresh, clear, clean, quiet, and peaceful.
Ah, the calm before the storm.
Dave began taking shots of the mountain with the 35mm camera. It was at this moment on May 18th that an earthquake of a 5.0 magnitude occurred. I meant to look up, like, what's the worst?
I think it's magnitude. A 7.
Right. So that's pretty high, right?
Yeah.
And the entire north side of the summit slid down the mountain. The summit slid down the mountain.
Jesus.
The whole bulge just whoop. This landslide of rock was one of the largest in recorded history, and it was immediately followed by an explosion of steam and volcanic gas. The blast stripped trees from most hill slopes within 6 miles of the volcano and took out all vegetation as far as 12 miles away from the initial eruption. As many as 10 million trees were felled by this blast.
Oh my God.
It was huge. And I got a picture below of the initial eruption, but it's far from over.
Yeah, I looked up the magnitude scale for earthquakes.
Uh-huh.
And it goes to, like, I guess it goes to 8.0 or greater, according to Michigan Tech. But, like, the estimated number of, like, those strong earthquakes is, like, one every year or two.
Yeah.
But, like, it says here 2.5 to 5.4 often felt, but only causes minor damage. And there's about 500,000 of those magnitude earthquakes that happen every year.
But considering this is in conjunction with a very tall mountain. Yeah.
Yes.
You know.
Not good news.
Yeah. So Dave Crockett caught the eruption on camera, seeing an awesome, immense black plume suddenly rocketed from the peak. As they billowed larger and larger, they mushroomed together into furiously boiling clouds, roiling black, blue, and yellow rind, like an exploding atomic bomb.
Yeah, that picture looks insane.
Yeah.
It's like it a was science after experiment. This-
Right?
Like when you do like the this volcano science experiment, it starts bubbling over and getting like all the tall smoke and stuff.
Yeah. It was after this, though, that the side of the mountain moved, heading faster and faster toward the valley where he was. The landslide debris became liquefied and surged down the mountain at an excess of 100 miles per hour.
Oh my God.
Toward him.
That's so scary. I wonder if then in that thought, he was like, oh shit, I should have gotten out of here when they told me to.
Well, the thing is, he was safe in Seattle. And then he woke up that morning and he was like, it's going to erupt today. And he drove to the volcano.
Yeah.
Yeah. News people, man, they're a different breed.
They are.
Yeah. So Dave jumped into his car and began racing back down the mountain, glancing at the horror show through his rearview mirror. So he's literally outrun.
Yeah, I would be shitting my pants.
Right? An immense 20-foot high wall of steaming wet mud was starting to overtake him, filled with boulders, stumps, snapping trees like twigs, and burying everything in its path. While Dave was maxing out the vehicle at 70 miles per hour down the curvy mountain road, because at some point you can't go faster. The mudslide, or Lahar, was traveling at nearly 150 miles per hour and was a total of 100 city blocks in size.
That is so scary. I wonder, too, like, at what point, like, if you're, because I don't know what this area looks like, so maybe you can tell me because you've been there, but, like, when you're winding down a road in your car, like, could he have gotten out and, like, just bolted down the side of it to get down quicker? Or, like, because you know what I'm saying? Like, it's either, like, you're going 70 miles an hour because you can't run that fast and you're trying to get as much speed away from it as possible. Or do you get out of the car and just cut corners and go straight down because, like, you have the ability to climb down? You know what I mean? So,
I haven't been to Mount St. Helens, but I have been to Rainier, which is taller. These mountains are huge. There are steep cliffs.
You can't really like climb down the side of it.
I mean, you could if you had like time and energy and patience.
Because like in my mind, it's like, oh, you could just like hop out of the car and like run down the hill and try to like, you know what I mean? Like instead of like, like zigzagging is longer than going straight down.
No, I get like you want to go as the crow flies instead of like where the road is. The other issue is you cannot run 150 miles per hour.
No, I know that for sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get that. I know that for sure. I was just curious if like it was far enough behind him where if he got down the side of the mountain and then could have been like in a taxi or something or a safe zone, whatever. I don't know. But okay, question answered. Well, not a possibility.
Another thing is when you're in this situation, those mountains are like a series of valleys kind of around, like you have a ridge line and a valley and a ridge line and a valley. And that's just kind of what it's like. So what you really need to do is get the fuck out of your car and get to high ground.
Oh.
If you're in a situation where a Lahar is after you or a pyroclastic flow is after you, the best thing to do is get to the high ground. Get to a ridge line.
Because that makes it's sense, because it's not going to go up. It's always going to go down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, for those of you who don't know, we talked about Lahars when we talked about the Armero tragedy.
Yeah, that girl's face is still burned into my brain.
I know. Buried a whole town. And that happened in 85, actually. Yeah. So, around the same time. So, a Lahar is a moving fluid mass or mud flow comprised of water and volcanic debris caused by an eruption.
I'm listening, but I just Waylon's dreaming, so if you hear like little yips, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was like, what's the noise? So sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. Lahars like pyroclastic flows, which Lahars are different because they're hot ash and steam, pyroclastic flows are hot ash and steam. Lahars are like the mud, hot mud,
right?
That's the difference.
But they both carry the debris in with them, though.
Yes.
Because they're tearing everything down.
Yeah. They're often the biggest cause of mortality from volcanic eruptions. With a Lahar, you get buried and suffocated in the mud. With a pyroclastic flow, you get burned to a crisp and suffocate in the gas. So
oh my
pick
God.
Your death, I guess.
Yeah.
So I do have a picture of Dave's footage
Oh,
from the
God.
initial eruption. So that's how close he was.
That's
so
scary.
It was then watching the Lahar pick up speed behind him that Dave knew he had to find higher ground, and he managed to find a logging road and drove up onto it. He managed to reach a slight rise while a second roaring wall of mud flowed into the valley immediately in front of him, sending rocks, trees, and dirt skyrocketing 100 feet into the air around him. He tried to reverse and go backwards away from that mudslide, but the road behind him was gone too, as the Lahar
Oh my
chasing him
God.
down the road had caught up with him as well.
Oh God.
So he's on like an island.
Yeah. Yep.
In this.
That's scary.
Dave stated of this moment, I was caught on a tiny island surrounded by a raging torrent of hot ooze. I'm used to danger as part of my job, but never before had I been so terrifyingly trapped.
Yes. I believe it.
So this main avalanche flooded Spirit Lake and the Toutle River, which is where Dave was, for a distance of 13 miles, burying the river to an average of 150 feet deep.
Golly.
In addition, there were additional mud flows, pyroclastic flows, and floods that destroyed roads, bridges, and thousands of acres of forest. The vertical eruption of gas formed a mushrooming column that shot more than 12 miles high into the sky above the volcano.
That's crazy.
It was a huge eruption.
Yeah.
You don't we talk about it anymore. This is crazy.
Yeah. Well, I looked at that map. I did scroll down for more photos, and I saw that map of like the extent of the damage when it came to the ash distribution.
Yeah.
Which that's it covers a large portion of the states.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy.
Meanwhile, now trapped, Dave got out of his car, grabbing his camera. He knew he had to get to higher ground as more mudslides could bury him any minute. He knew that he was on the part of the mountain where scientists warned that carbon dioxide gas would sink to during an eruption, which is a deadly cocktail of fuckery that could kill him.
Yeah, seriously.
In order to reach higher ground, he would have to cross the 200-foot-wide river of flowing mud.
Oh, God.
Right. Which we've talked about mud frequently, I guess, where we talk about experiencing it as scientists, like, doing field work and stuff. So,
yeah.
It's not great, and it gives me claustrophobia when I get sucked into it. Personally.
It makes me think of the Mattapani, and then I start, yeah.
The Mattapani.
Then I get claustrophobic too, and I'm like, dear God, how am I going to get myself out of this?
Yes. So he stepped into it, and it sucked him down like quicksand, but he was able to find some sort of solid ground underneath, and only sank to his thigh, which is doable if it's not solid. You can walk in it. It's exhausting, but you can do it.
Yeah.
It was only warm, not boiling, as the melted snow and ice had cooled the volcanic debris down as it rolled down the mountain. So it's just warm, fucking thick mud. Like, that's the vibe. He held his cameras above his head and slogged through, and by the time he'd reached the other side, he was exhausted, gasping for breath. He was surprised that he was out of breath, as he was an active man who jogged 4 miles every day and climbed mountains recreationally regularly. And to me, I was like, yeah, it's because you walk through 200 foot of mud. I don't care how fit you are. That's going to exhaust you.
That's what I was thinking too. That. And then also like the like anxiety, like, you know, when like you get anxious, you feel like you can't breathe either.
Yeah.
I feel like there's some of that probably going on as well.
Yeah. But he did realize the loss of breath might've been from CO2 poisoning too. So he knew he had to keep climbing.
Yeah.
Once he reached the top of the hill, he began filming again, and you can find this footage on YouTube. Like,
oh really?
Go look it up after this. It's creepy. It is so creepy.
And it only been five, clearly, because he's still going, so
right. It only been 5 to 10 tumultuous minutes since the eruption had begun, and the sky above him had already began getting dark, leaving only one spot on the horizon. It was what remained of the sun burning through the murk. He began to describe what was going on while filming, so you can hear him talking in the footage.
That's so wild.
As the ash began to fall, because he thought that these would be his last words and maybe someone would eventually find the camera and bear witness to the eruption and his death.
Mm-hmm.
So on camera, you can hear Dave speak, saying, "Dear God, whoever finds this, I can't see. It's too dark. I've left the car behind. I'm walking toward the only light I can see on top of a bridge. I can hear the mountain behind me rumbling. I never thought I'd really believe this or only say this, but this moment, I honest to God believe I'm dead. There's really no way to truly describe these feelings. The ash in my eyes, it's getting very hard to breathe. It hurts to talk. It hurts to breathe. It burns my eyes." So he's just monologuing during this whole, and it goes on for quite a while.
I'm sure it's giving me very much the vibes of Aaron Ralston,
where he's if you
find this video, like, I died.
Yeah. That, seeing the videos of, like, what people think are their last moments or people's last moments, and, like, mm-hmm. hearing their inner monologue is just, it's so creepy to me.
Yeah.
It's unnerving.
It's creepy and it's sad. It's emotional. Like, it's just,
yeah.
It's a lot.
So, in a later interview, Dave stated of the experience that gritty, sandy ash pelted down on me, roiling volcanic clouds above were creating their own weather. Hot winds raged and lightning flashed and cracked. So this was so mm-hmm. big that it was creating lightning storms.
Yes.
Fire shot up where the bolt struck. Thunder cannonaded. Interesting word choice. and the ground heaved and shook. The clouds and ash literally got so thick that it became pitch black around Dave as he struggled to breathe. Because Dave was a scuba diver as well, he had learned to conserve air by staying motionless. He spent the next 6 hours in complete darkness, just sitting and waiting.
Oh my God. That's scary.
And I have a little bit of footage as the sky is darkening and there's literally all black except for one bit of light.
That ridgeline. Yeah. That's scary, but also, like, good for him for having the wherewithal to be like, I know if I keep moving, I'm gonna, exhaust myself and my resources, so I just need to sit and wait it out.
Yeah.
But then also, scary waiting it out, because holy crap, like, you're in an active explosion.
Yes.
Like, oh my God.
He's 8 miles away from the summit. 8 miles, yeah, that's it.
That's insane.
Dave realized, though, that no one knew where he was, because he hadn't told anyone that he was leaving since he left the house at 3 a.m. that morning.
And rule number one is you always tell somebody where you're going.
Especially if you're driving into an active volcano.
Active volcano, yes.
because the ash was falling so fast, he thought that he'd be buried beneath it and no one would find his body for years.
That's a scary thought.
He began grieving that he would never be able to see his family, friends, or pets, which I looked it up. He had 2 parrots and 2 snakes.
Aww, that's cool.
And he was worried he'd never see them in Seattle again, saying, if only somehow be given 10 more minutes to drop in and let them know, just 10 minutes.
I feel that. When I'm away from Waylon too long, I'm like, oh, I wonder how he's doing.
I know.
I wish I could just, like, text him and tell him I'm on my way home.
Yeah.
Like, you know what, like, I mean?
I would bring it with me if I could, but...
Yeah.
After 6 hours of waiting, he knew he had to get up and keep moving. It came to him as an instantaneous feeling. He said that he felt God watching over him. He began walking and saw that the sky lightened somewhat, and he was able to see some of his surroundings. He said it had been such a beautiful green valley, meadows, elk, deer, wildlife of all kinds. Now it was gone. Instead, I faced a bleak, ghastly landscape of bone gray ash as far as I could see. Several inches of ash covered everything, stumps, trees, rocks. Not far away, it had mounded over a deer's body, silting even its protruding horns.
Oh my God.
Again, he realized he was the only living thing in sight. Hmm. And he felt he wouldn't be alive for long. He knew that he wasn't going to be able to get out on his own, that help would have to come from outside. Again, he waited and prayed for several hours, saving his energy. And I have a selfie of Dave. It's the only picture I could find of him, actually.
Yeah.
He's got a very late 70s vibe.
He does. That's what I thought, too.
The mustache, so especially.
Yeah, and, like, the hair. He's got kind of, like, the Beatles hair.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And he's just a guy. He's just a guy, you know?
He's just a reporter doing reporter things.
Doing his job. Suddenly he heard the thump thump of helicopters and watched them fly over him, but each one passed him by. How many times have we talked about survival experiences where there's been aircraft or helicopters going overhead and they don't see the person? And it's got to be the worst. Because he was covered in gray ash, they couldn't see him because he just blended in with the surroundings. He knew he would have to get their attention. He thought there might be a flare in his TV news car. So Dave scrambled back down the slope and waded through the mud again to reach where his car was, which miraculously was unburied, and he found a flare that his coworker had put there.
Good.
He recrossed the mud and climbed the hill again, setting the flare, but again, another chopper passed by without seeing him.
Oh, no. But at least maybe the chopper saw the flare, so they're like, okay, we need to kind of, like, pay attention to this area?
Well, no? The issue was, because lightning had struck fires all over the mountain, the flare probably just looked like another wildfire.
Oh, God, that's so disheartening.
As his flare began to fizzle out, he decided to light three flares with the flare that he had. As three was an international sign of distress, he could kind of, like, wave them around and more, you know, light, basically. This last-ditch effort brought attention to a Coast Guard helicopter that began descending. However, the helicopter blades whipped up so much ash they could not see where to land.
God.
Instead, the helicopter lowered a basket for Dave to get in. However, the ash was suffocating and blinding. He couldn't see the basket, and the crew couldn't see him.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
That is so frustrating.
A smaller army helicopter tried getting to him, but again, no luck. The area he was at on top of the hill did not have enough maneuverability for the helicopters to land. Dave was exhausted, but he knew he needed to get off the mountain, so he decided to go up the road further to an area that was wider open that would allow the helicopter to maneuver better. Same issue with the ash, but the helicopter let out 150 foot of cable this time with the basket, but the ash was still blowing everywhere, even with the helicopter at this height. Dave knew it was now or never, however, and he made a blind leap of faith for the basket and managed to grab it. He heaved the camera gear over and jumped in just as the basket jerked up, slamming the basket lid against his head and knocked him out momentarily.
Oh my God.
When he came to, he was dangling in the basket with the helicopter flying over the gray landscape, which would have been very unnerving. Once he was pulled in the helicopter, he was treated for exposure, exhaustion, and gas inhalation.
Oh my gosh.
And I have a picture here of the landscape following the eruption, what he was talking about.
Okay. Yeah, I see.
It's pretty bleak.
Yeah, it really is. There's like no signs of life. No, yeah. Nothing is green anymore.
No, all the trees are knocked down. And
yeah, it's all white. It looks like a desert.
If you know anything about the Pacific Northwest, like, there's a lot of trees. There's a lot.
Yeah.
So, a few hours later, he entered the emergency room 10 hours since the eruption began. He stayed overnight in the hospital, although suffered no major injuries from the ordeal. Dave later reflected on this experience, noting if he had driven his car a little slower or a little faster, his life would have been over.
Yeah, because fast on those windy roads, he would have tipped his car over and down.
Well, also, he had mud behind him and mud in front of him. Trapped on that island.
Yeah.
He had always used the outdoors as a safe and secure escape from society, but after this experience, he rethought some of those beliefs. But he truly believed God saw him through the entire experience. Dave's car was recovered later, and it now sits at the Hofstad Bluffs Visitor Center on Mount St. Helens.
Oh, wow. So he's got a little memento
from
his experience out there.
So I have a picture of before and after the eruption, pretty much taken almost from the same vantage point. It literally blew the top off of the mountain.
Yeah, it did. It did for sure. That's what I was gonna say. I was like, the top is gone.
Yeah. And there's like a big fucking hole
Yeah.
right where the summit was. By the afternoon on May 18th, the eruption subsided, and by the following day, it was basically over. The volcanic cone was completely destroyed and replaced by a horseshoe-shaped crater. And this thing takes up like the entire side of the mountain. It's not just like at the top. It's like the whole fucking mountain.
Yeah.
Many locals were saddened by the destruction of what they called the Lady. That's what Mount St. Helens was known by locals. It had once resembled Mount Fuji in beauty and symmetry. After the eruption, the volcano lost 1,700 feet of elevation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Ash fell on Pacific Northwest cities and drifted across the globe for 2 weeks. 57 people, thousands of animals, and millions of fish were killed by the eruption, including Harry Truman, who died after refusing to leave his lodge on Spirit Lake. He was last seen at 6 p.m. on Monday, or sorry, on May 17th at the lodge. And then the mountain erupted, burying Spirit Lake in at the lodge. And the lake is that Spirit Lake is that lake you see in front of the volcano in each picture.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And it did definitely bury it. Holy crap.
Yeah, we'll get to Spirit Lake's really interesting. So I have some pictures of the ash field following the eruption from satellite. And for size comparison, you can see all those little farm fields on the right-hand
Yeah.
side to give
Yeah.
you an idea of
Jeez.
the scale.
Yeah, that's insane. So Spirit Lake is that oh, my microphone was kind of not in front of me. Spirit Lake is that, like, I guess horseshoe kind of looking. It looks kind of looks like a turtle. Little head, little shell and arms and stuff in
Yeah.
front of the horseshoe of the explosion. That's Spirit Lake.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Because it looks like there's some lakes to the left of it too, unless
Yes.
that's land, but I can't tell.
No, that is all what Spirit Lake used to be. It was like filled in.
Oh, so it used to surround the entire. I see. And
Yes.
now it's not. And now they're named different lakes.
No, it's just Spirit Lake. If you go to the one below, you can see what the outline looked like. And then if you go up, you can see what part of it was like filled in.
I gotcha.
And then I also have a map that shows the ash fallout, which covers like the five states.
Yeah, and then like a little blip in Oklahoma. Like, that's
Yeah, I don't
weird.
know. I wonder if it's just like wind patterns or weather patterns
It
that.
could have, yeah, probably was just wind. But yeah, it goes Washington, a little Oregon, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming. What is that one? Colorado. I'm an idiot. Nebraska, South Dakota, North Dakota, and then a little tippy tip of Wisconsin. Or no, that's Minnesota, not Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's Minnesota. A little bit into New Mexico, a little bit into
Yeah.
Oklahoma, but
Yeah.
the worst of it was definitely in like Washington State.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, and I'm even just looking at the yellow stuff, like the yeah. God. Yeah, the orange and the red stuff. Yeah, there
Then
is
I
like a little bit of
have
red.
a picture of the depth of the mud flow near on the road near Toutle River, and basically this guy is standing next to like the actual sign, like that would be on a road sign, and the rest
Yeah.
of the sign is buried.
Yeah.
So
So
that
if you
was the
think
blow.
about.
Would definitely bury a car
Oh,
for
for
sure.
sure. Two cars.
Due to the landslide, the water in Spirit Lake was displaced, filled with mud and debris, but over time the water has flowed back to the basin. The thousands of trees caught in that landslide still float on the lake in a log mat to this day,
Oh, wow.
which is a reminder of the destruction that has become part of the lake's ecosystem in years. So the log mat moves around the lake with the wind, which sheds carbon and nitrogen into the lake, which feeds algae and bacteria on the logs, which contributes to the lake's food web and produces trophy-sized rainbow trout in this lake. And there's a lot of science going on to study the effects of the log mat on the ecosystem, because we have, you know, a baseline of before and an after, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of interesting work going on looking at how a disturbance impacts of this magnitude impacts an ecosystem.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting.
So you can study like forest growth from basically from scratch here.
Yeah. Well, and I was gonna say the log mat, like since it's floating, I'm like, that's prime fish habitat too. I'm sure that they got some floaters underneath there.
So if you look at the next one, it's that's the log mat. All that like gray, white looking, those are all logs.
Oh.
It's huge.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
I thought, yeah, definitely did not think it looked like that.
Yeah.
I thought that was still land.
No. That's the log mat. So in addition, the lahar that swept down the mountain and down the Toodle River filled the Columbia River channel and blocked ship traffic. Five smaller explosive eruptions happened during the summer and fall of 1980. The volcano remains active today. And in 1982, President Ronald Reagan and Congress made Mount St. Helens a protected research area and a national monument. Mount St. Helens erupted again on March 8th, 2005, with a 3,600-foot plume of smoke or steam and ash, but it was nowhere near the catastrophic 1980 eruption. Another minor eruption took place in 2008. While there is a small dome growing at the peak and small earthquakes do happen, volcanologists do not expect another 1980 level eruption anytime soon. Slowly, the forests around the volcano have begun to recover, but there are huge reminders of the eruption, including the massive crater hole on the mountain and the log mat on Spirit Lake. Today, you can visit the mountain and even the crater itself at the Mount St. Helens National Monument or Gifford Pinchot National Forest. And I have a picture of what it looks like today.
It looks really pretty, that picture.
Yeah. Still very decimated, though, you know, around it. And my dad said that when he and my mom went, it was 5 years after, and they would not let them go anywhere near the crater.
Yeah, I bet, because they're so, like, kind of uncertain, probably.
Yeah, and he said, you know, there was no, like, trees or anything around the area. Like you said, stuff was, you could tell stuff was starting to grow back, but it wasn't, I mean, it was still, even 5 years out, just decimated. So
yeah,
that is the story of Dave Crockett, who miraculously survived the Mount St. Helens eruption. And
yeah, how insane is that?
Yeah, it's wild. Which I thought, I don't know, I thought that was a really cool story. And he is so lucky. He is so lucky. Yeah,
he is very, very lucky. Yes, I agree.
But yeah, so it's, I mean, it's a huge thing. Natural disasters, one of our most significant natural disasters, other than like hurricanes and stuff, that has ever happened in the States. So
yeah. I mean, volcanoes, man, they're no joke. You know, and earthquakes too. Like, I don't want to be living where the earth is moving.
No, no, thank you. And there's not anything you can do. Like,
there's
you know, you're just, and they're not human caused. So it's like, it's just going to happen when it happens, you know?
Yeah.
So my sources are Mount St. Helens erupts from history.com. He miraculously survived the eruption of Mount St. Helens from David Crockett guideposts. And originally I didn't want to use the source because it's a very like Christian, like, you know, God helped him through kind of, but it is an interview from him. And so I use the parts from his interview, right?
Gotcha.
Dave Crockett's narrow escape, Dana Hunter, Scientific American. I'd see it like it was yesterday. St. Helens eruption seared into witness memories. From Nick Popham and the Como staff, from Como News, Harry Truman still believed in love as Mount St. Helens eruption loomed, refused to leave the mountain that gave him everything. By Douglas Perry from the Oregonian or Oregon Live, the floating logs of Spirit Lake, from Catherine Hansen, from Earth Observatory, NASA. So that's the deal. That's it. That's the thing.
Gotcha. Good story.
Yeah, that's why that's I wanted to tell it. And I was like, we have too many news stories we have to cover.
I know. Too many.
freaking billionaires and their damn submarine. You know, my mom summed it up perfectly after I told her. She was the one who brought it to my attention first, actually.
Yeah.
She was like, once I was like, yeah, so now there's two wrecks down there. And she's like, it's creepy and it's sad.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah,
it is.
That is kind of the gist of that whole ordeal. So, yeah. Let's do happy things real quick.
Happy things. I'm going to Texas and I'm going to see you.
Yay! Haley and Jillian live. Woo! In person. Yeah,
I know. That would be cool if we could do that, but I don't think I'm going to have any time.
We don't have enough time. And I just frankly don't feel like doing it. It's fine. You'll see. Yeah, we'll post we'll some hang pictures. Out.
Yeah. No, I'm excited about that. Like, my cousin's going to get married. I'm going to see you. I'm going to get out of town for a bit. It's going to be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll go to like cool places and bring a swimsuit for sure, because it's hot as shit down here.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's your hotel has a pool and we can go to Zilker Park too. So
yeah, that'd be good. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really my happy thing.
Yeah. I guess that was also my happy thing. Because I'm like, I get a break. I get to see a friend who we see each other every week. So it feels like I see you all the time.
I know.
We never see each other in person. So
I know.
One of these days, if we get enough leave, we'll come out and see y'all in the Keys.
Yeah. And honestly, I was just telling my cousin this too, because we know how expensive it is down here. So it's like, if people come visit us, we're like, you have a bedroom. So
exactly.
You don't have to worry about a hotel expense. Yeah. And then, we do have an extra car because Alex really uses his, work vehicle a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. So, there's a spare vehicle here. So, you guys don't even need to really worry about, a rental car.
Yeah.
And so, that's, a big chunk of cost already mm-hmm. down. So, if you, I told my cousin, I was like, if you can just pay for your plane flight and then, some food and activities, that's all you really got a budget for, because everything else is taken care of for you. So.
And to us, it's a no-brainer, but we're going to Europe this year for a wedding.
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, I get that. That's expensive.
Well, and it's the leave, too, you know? Yeah, we only have so much leave.
I know. That's
so, amazing. Yeah. So that's mine, but also I have 1 week left. By Tuesday of this week, I will be done with eel field work.
Ooh, that's exciting.
I've been doing this since July of last year. So,
oh, wow.
A whole year
in the books
of weekly site checking, pretty much.
Yeah.
And I am done and I'm so excited. So this is a lovely little celebrational end cap to that study, so that I get to go up to Austin and hang out with you and do fun stuff.
Yeah. So. Cheers to so many things.
Yeah, I know.
Good.
So that's mine.
We're each other's happy thing. That's sweet.
I know. Okay. Where can our listeners find us?
Yeah, you can find us on the socials, on Instagram at Mother Nature Will Kill You Podcast. And then we're on TikTok at MNWKY Podcast. And then we're on Facebook as Mother Nature Will Kill You. I need to talk better. I've noticed I kind of slur my words just because I talk kind of fast. But yeah, so that's where you can find us on the socials. And then if you want to listen to us anywhere, we are on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts at Mother Nature Will Kill You. And then you can find us on our website, which is mothernaturewillkillyoupodcast.com.
Yeah. If you survived going to the deep sea in a submersible, or if you survived Mount St. Helens' eruption, or were even there, we want to hear about it. And you can send your stories to our website, has a submission page, or you can send it to our Gmail. And if it's just a normal, I had an uncomfy experience in nature and I want to talk about it, that's fine too.
Yeah.
We will take those as well, because we've all had those.
Yes.
If you want to help out the podcast but don't have any money, because we live in a post-capitalist hellscape, you can give us a 5-star review on any of our listening platforms to help bump us up the algorithm and the charts. Yes. I think that's it. All right.
Yeah. And the one thing we didn't really talk about for the submarine stuff is how there was literally a guy that was went on it or like inspected, not inspected it, but he was like, I was going to go on that, but then I backed out because it didn't seem safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
because
yeah,
it doesn't take, I'm sorry. I couldn't. That was such, just to be like, not, especially not for that much money either.
Yeah.
Like, no. Anyway, so if more stuff comes up that's like of significance, I will feed it out as the weeks go on, because I'm sure there'll be more shit that comes out as they investigate both Ocean Gate and the wreck that is now next to the other wreck on the seafloor. Can you imagine like going down after that and then you're like, can we go see the Titan wreck too? Because it's the same thing. I mean, you're witnessing basically a graveyard.
Yeah.
You know? It's wild.
Overall, it's a tragedy, though. And it's sad that lives are lost in the name of, you know, research excursions, I guess. It wasn't even research.
It's just a tourism.
Yeah. But I guess, like, the quote-unquote research side of it was, like, them with their quote-unquote new technology. You know what I mean? Like, they're testing new technology.
I just wouldn't want to be the guinea pig.
Oh, no, me neither. That's why I was like, it's one thing to not put people in it and, like, send it down and test it, and then it implodes, and then it's another thing to try it out for the first, not, well, I guess it wasn't the first time, but to try it out relatively new with people inside, and
it implodes. So. Yeah, and if you want to check out, like, submersibles that actually worked, or actually do work, look up the Alvin or the Challenger Deep Sea, which that one went all the way down to the Challenger Deep, which is the deepest point on Earth in the Mariana Trench. That was funded by James Cameron, actually. James Cameron has a lot to say about this, too, so look up.
He's been on interviews all over the news, for sure. Yeah.
So... yeah, check those out. They're doing really, really cool research all across the globe. And that's part of the reason why the Alvin couldn't come to the rescue, because it wasn't at Hui, which is in Cape Cod. It was in the Pacific doing research there. So,
yeah.
Sorry about it, you know? Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway. Until next time. Is that what I say? God, now I'm all over the place now. Until next time, stay safe. But most of all,
stay curious, explorers.
Bye.
Goodbye.